Radio News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Our guest today, journalist and author Linda Killian, has covered American politics for decades. And over that time, Killian found herself increasingly bothered by the hyper-partisanship that defines our current political era, with both parties staking out no-compromise positions, while most voters say they just want the country's problems solved. And that's why, Killian says, many Americans are turning away from Republican and Democratic labels, more and more calling themselves independent. Now in her new book called The Swing Vote, Killian explores who these people are, what they want, and why they feel so disconnected from politics. She interviewed hundreds of independents in four states, Colorado, Ohio, Virginia, and New Hampshire. Each state has its own flavor of independent voter. For example, in the Granite State, Killian meets many former Republicans who found themselves uncomfortable with the rightward movement of the national GOP. But Killian's book isn't just a lament on the deficiencies of the parties. She concludes it with ideas to make the system more inviting to independent voices, among them open primaries like what we have here in New Hampshire. Today in The Exchange, an in-depth look at independents and why Killian says they're being ignored. Let's hear from you. If you're an independent, tell us why. What is it about the major parties that turns you off? And if you're a proud party member, why do you think so many Granite Staters register undeclared? Why aren't they joining your party? Give us a call, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, exchange at nhpr.org is the address. And Linda Killian, nice to see you. Welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you for having me, Laura.
So who are these folks? Are they former disgruntled Democrats, disgruntled Republicans? Are they people who just aren't interested in politics? Are they Greens? Are they Libertarians? Who are they?
Well, they're a whole mix. They are really span the spectrum. In the swing vote, I talk mostly about the center, which I think is the majority of swing voters. But there are also libertarians on the right. There are very progressive people on the left who register as independents. There are some disgruntled Republicans you mentioned. I call them NPR Republicans, who tend to be socially liberal but fiscally conservative. There are some disgruntled Democrats. We have known them as Reagan Democrats. I call them America First Democrats. They would be more socially conservative. Working class, factory workers, police, firefighters, in Massachusetts, you have a lot of those kind of voters. They elected Scott Brown. So they span the spectrum. So I don't think you can categorize them as one thing.
So for the purposes of your book, though, Linda, you focused on who you call the swing voters. Now, tell us more about that.
The swing voters. And I know you said that you wanted to talk about if the swing voters actually exist. And there's been some national media surrounding my book on this. And is this a myth, the swing voters? As I said, as you, I think, mentioned, 40% of all American voters across the country are registered as independents, unaffiliated, some
undeclared
states called
New
undeclared. It's about a third, I think, in New Hampshire, a little more than a third are undeclared. Now, of that group, obviously there are people, and some academics talk about this, that are registered independent but consistently vote either Republican or Democrat. I, using various polling data, Pew Research, exit polls, of that 40%, I think it is very fair to say that half of that group, or 20% of the total electorate, of total registered voters, almost a quarter, are true swing voters.
So yeah, you're right. Your book has sparked some academic kerfluffle and debate over who really is independent, Linda. And there was a groundbreaking book in 1992 called The Myth of the Independent Voter. Analysts here in New Hampshire have also said they think that truly independent voters, truly independent, are a lot smaller than what you say, 7%, 10%.
Well, if that were the case, how do you explain the swing from 2008 to 2010? In 2008, you had, of course, Barack Obama won, and he won the swing vote by a fairly small percentage, but he won the swing vote. And, of course, the Democrats won Congress. In 2010, you had almost a 19-point swing of independent voters. Now, they didn't all vote. turnout was kind of low among independent voters in 2010. But of those who voted, they swung dramatically to the Republicans.
How much of those who swing are, again, independents coming out, swinging one way or the other? And how much is it each time, Linda, one side's base being more energized than the other?
Well, I think they're both factors. I think a lot of times, again, the academics and the pundits like to dismiss the independent voters, the swing voters. They say they don't care as much. They say they aren't as involved. They don't pay as much attention.
I've seen a lot of that. Yeah.
Yes. As the true partisans, as the Tea Party or MoveOn.org crowd, you know, on each end. It may be true that the independents don't. I mean, for example, in the Republican debates, independents watch them in a lower percentage even than Democrats. But why should they care? In half the states in the country, they can't participate in the primaries. So to their mind, well, let's wait. Let the Republicans pick their candidate. I don't have a say anyway. I'll pay attention in the fall, you know, when the national campaign really starts and when we have the national debates. So it does depend on the year. They certainly turned out in 2008. That was an exciting year. I think in the primaries, obviously we don't have a Democratic primary this year, but in the Republican primaries, turnout is down kind of across the board. And registered Republicans are not turning out in as high a percentage. This isn't a very exciting year. People are turned off. People are angry. People are kind of disgusted with the system. And I think that results in fewer people showing up to vote.
Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Again, today in the exchange, we're looking at a new book called The Swing Vote with Linda Killian, journalist and senior scholar at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. If you're an independent voter, tell us why you chose that status. And do you agree with Killian that your concerns are ignored? Also, if you're a member of the Republican and Democratic Party, why do you think so many voters are not registering with your party, are registering undeclared here in New Hampshire? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. So you say in the book, Linda, that despite the numbers, which you argue are larger than some other academics, the voices of independents are not being heard in our elections. What do you mean by that?
It's funny. I was at Franklin Pierce yesterday, and one of the professors asked me a question about this. Well, if independent voters aren't being heard, why is there so much discussion about how are the independent voters going to vote? How are the swing voters going to vote? And I think that is pretty much the extent of the attention that the journalists and the political parties pay them. How are they going to vote?
Not what do they care about.
Not what do they care about. And you see some movement. I think Barack Obama, and I was just talking about this with someone, I think Barack Obama knows that one of the groups I mentioned, the America First Democrats, the conservative Democrats, working class, are in play this time. And I think he knows that. And I think you've seen he's done a number of appearances at manufacturing places. He's unveiled a variety of tax benefits that would help attempt to help create manufacturing jobs here in the U.S. to compensate for those that have been shipped overseas. And those voters, and Ohio is one of the states I focused on, police, firefighters, you know, they had an anti-union vote in 2010 in Wisconsin. And in Ohio, there were, you know, was legislation to strip public unions of their collective bargaining rights and really crack down on unions. Well, the public employees just really rebelled against this, collected five times the number of signatures they needed, resoundingly defeated the measure. And this has activated them. And I had a policeman, I've been corresponding with a policeman from Ohio who's in the book, and who I saw him, I was in Ohio for Super Tuesday week, and he emails me and he said, look, He is consistently voted Republican. He's working for Barack Obama this time around. So I think that is a group that's in play this time.
And you think there's more of those people than a lot of academics think?
Yes.
Let's take some calls, Linda. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Jim in Moultonboro is up first. Hi, Jim. You're on the air. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, and I really enjoy your show. My question is this: can your guests please tell me the three top benefits to the United States of political parties, and would you rank them from the most important down? Thank you very much.
Well, Jim, how do you feel about political parties?
This is a serious question. I do not understand how they help. It seems to me that they do probably more harm than good, but I could be missing something.
Right. Okay. Thanks for calling in.
Well, since I sort of criticize political parties in the
maybe
book,
the wrong person to ask.
I'm not really the person to defend them. I mean, I think what the political parties would say is that they're an organizing mechanism to combine like-minded individuals who either may think like a Republican or think like a Democrat, but and they're an organizing principle for the government, for organizing Congress. But what I say in the book is we've had a breakdown of the party system, and the parties have become more extreme. I think the Republicans a bit more than the Democrats, which I sort of discovered in the book. I started off sort of an equal opportunity, you know, both parties have become extreme, but I think the Republicans more so, and we can talk about that in terms of the Tea Party, and it's happened here in New Hampshire. But so as the parties and the people who get elected, I don't think it's all registered Republicans and all registered Democrats. It's not them, it's the party activists and the elected officials. As they have become more to the extremes, more people feel left out, maybe like you. And so they become independents. That's why the independent group is growing.
Well, partisanship gets a bad rap, and it certainly gets a bad rap in your book, Linda. But there is another view that partisanship represents people's deeply held beliefs, that compromise on some beliefs isn't an option. Not everything is negotiable. Should it be? I mean, is there a role there for parties?
Well, of course there's a role for parties, and I would not advocate that we abolish the two-party system. I'm not even saying in the book, I don't come out definitively for the creation of a third party, and I don't think all independent voters feel that way. They just want reform in the system.
All right, we'll talk more about that after a short break. Jim, lots to chew on. Thank you for joining us. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. More with Linda Killian after a short break.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and support for NHPR comes from UR members. Support also comes to us from the NEEP Network Organizations, a statewide leader assisting students and parents planning for college. Information at nhheaf.org. And the Turner Group of Concord Architects, Engineers, and Building Scientists celebrating over 20 years of creating sustainable buildings for a healthy environment. Online at hlturner.com. More of our in-depth look at the independent voter on the exchange on NHPR and at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, Prospects for Change in Cuba. New Hampshire weather today, cloudy, some rain showers in central and southern areas of the state, highs 45 to 50, cloudy, a mix of rain and snow showers in the north country, highs near 40. Tonight, cloudy, rain showers in central and southern areas of the state, lows 35 to 40, cloudy, a chance of scattered snow showers in the north country tonight, lows there around 30. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, Independent Voters, a new book by our guest Linda Killian, looks at four states, including New Hampshire, where these voters hold sway, looking at what they want, who they are, and why they feel so disconnected from our political system. We invite you to join us, 1-800-892-6477, or send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. Also, The Exchange is now on Facebook. We hope you'll go to our page. Join the conversation there. If you're an independent voter, tell us why. What is it about the Republicans and Democrats that you don't like? And do you agree with Killian that your concerns are ignored? If you're a proud card-carrying member of the Democratic or Republican Party, why do you think so many Granite Staters are not voting with your party? Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. And Linda, before we go back to our listeners, a little bit more on why independent voters time and time again told you they felt their concerns were ignored. You started going there with Jim's question about the parties and how they've become more far to the left and far to the right. But I think there's a lot more to it.
That's right. What I talk about in the book is once the candidates in general, in statewide and general elections, have to woo the independent voters to win statewide. You have to do it to win a Senate race in New Hampshire. You have to do it to win the presidency, to win the state in a presidential race. But once the election is over, and I use the metaphor of a one-night stand in the book, you know, once they have the votes of the independent voters, once they've wooed them, they tend to turn their back on them because the independent voters are no longer important to what they need to get done. They need to raise money, and they do that from party activists and from lobbyists and from special interests. They need to get along with the leadership in Congress, which is totally about team play, win and lose. Our side gets the advantage. The other side gets crushed. And if they and we've seen with Olympia Snow and her announcement recently, this is exactly what she said.
The senator from Maine.
Yes, the Republican moderate senator from Maine. She tried to work in the middle. She tried to work with the Democrats on some issues. She tried to get her party to compromise. She just was totally ignored and given a lot of sort of grief for it. And she finally said, enough is enough. I can't work in this system anymore.
Isn't it partly, Linda, correct me if I'm wrong, people complain about this hyperpartisanship, but in a sense, you know, aren't we electing people who represent our deeply held beliefs? We want people who aren't going to compromise on health care or abortion. So, you know, people moan about partisanship, but they also want people to stick up for what they believe in Congress. So I'm just wondering again if we're blaming the politicians when really we should be looking at ourselves.
No, I think the party activists want people, the Tea Party and the MoveOn.org people, as I said, they want people that refuse to compromise. The health care is a perfect example, health reform, and we're facing it right now in Supreme Court arguments this week. It passed without a single Republican vote. The Republican leadership and activists said, don't you dare vote for that thing, to the Republicans. The Democratic progressive activists said, we want single payer, which they didn't get and they're very unhappy about, but don't compromise, don't try to make the Republicans happy. And so you had healthcare pass without a single Republican vote, and it didn't have the cost containment. I mean, I think progressives would say it wasn't what they wanted, but it didn't have other things that I think would have won Republican votes. And, you know, I don't think that the center, I don't think that the swing voters are as alienated as the party activists. And yes, there are partisan people who have their beliefs and don't feel we should compromise, but that's not how you govern. That's how you get gridlock. That's how we haven't had a budget passed by Congress in years. That's how we can't come to a debt ceiling agreement, you know, or have the breakdown of the super committee.
I want to share with you a quick quote from Charlie Arlinghouse, who's a conservative analyst here in the state. He says, on both ends of the political spectrum, the belief in principles and ideas increasingly is being ridiculed in favor of a supposedly noble brand of gelatin called consensus. He says we need to heed Margaret Thatcher's advice and realize that too often consensus is the opposite of conviction. Politicians need to be clear about where they stand, not make a virtue out of having no fixed belief. So, you know, again, at some point, you need to believe in something.
Well, and I think this is also a myth, and I don't know that many people would think Margaret Thatcher was sort of a paragon of, you know, sort of virtue, and certainly she did not compromise. You know, this is, I think, a myth, another myth about the swing voters, in the same way that they aren't that important or that they don't exist, that they don't believe anything. And that is just not true.
Yeah, but they're milquetoast,
yes.
or as Charlie puts it, you know, gelatin.
They don't believe what he believes, and he thinks that's wrong. In the same way that the progressives, if you don't believe, you know, I had a review of the book, if you're not a progressive, forget it. You know, you're wrong. The centrist independent voters that I interviewed agreed, and the Pew Research Center backs me up in terms of polling. They agreed with the Democratic Party on social issues. They think the Democratic Party is right in its direction on social issues. But they agreed with the Republican Party on some issues like foreign affairs and the deficit, at least Republican rhetoric, not practice on the deficit. And so they do believe things, but they believe a mixture. There isn't a party, one party, that totally represents their views. It's a mixture of both parties.
Well, we've got lots of those independent voters who want to talk to you now, Linda. So again, you can join us 1-800-892-6477. And Benjamin is up next from Raymond. Hi, Benjamin. Thanks for hanging on. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to comment on the allusion you made to the notion that people are disgusted with the present system. And I wanted to make a comment on the direction of party politics in general. And I think that people are disgusted with the system mainly because they recognize that Democrats and Republicans have essentially become one and the same. Now, we may think that, how did this happen? Well, when under the Bush administration, when they had all these transgressions on civil liberties, the Democrats, and, you know, I voted for Obama in 2008, but the Democrats were screaming about just wiretaps, and they were screaming about, you know, all of these secret spy programs and preemptive war and everything. What has the Obama administration done? The Obama administration has gone and expanded these. They've become the most secretive administration ever. The ACLU is actually taking them to court right now over their denial to disclose freedom of information requests. And the president now is assassinating American citizens, like, without showing any evidence at all.
Benjamin, the idea that, and I've heard other independent voters express this, Linda, the idea is that there's not that much difference between Republicans and Democrats. I think we heard this in 2000 when Ralph Nader got into the race.
Well, there certainly is a difference between Republicans and Democrats. I mean, I think you see it borne out in the Republican primary campaign. Certainly on social issues, there's a wide difference between Republicans and Democrats. But what I would say, and what I heard from Republican voters over and over, the thing that the two parties are exactly the same on is raising money and the impact that money has on both parties and special interests and lobbyists. The special interests who contribute to them might be somewhat different, but they both have a huge reliance on major donors and campaign fundraising and doing favors. There is no doubt that money buys access in Washington. And putting things into the tax code, both parties equally guilty of that. And so that is something that independent voters totally feel. They are the 99%. They feel that there's one set of rules for the wealthy and politicians and one set for them, and they feel the system is rigged.
Well, and so you're saying there are policy differences between the parties. But on some issues, I have heard people say what Benjamin says, that Barack Obama's foreign policy has not been as different as people thought, and that there is some disappointment with him on this issue of, you know, civil rights and national security and so forth. So you write in the book, actually, that Barack Obama was supposed to be a post-partisan president, and it hasn't quite worked out that way. How come, Linda?
Well, I do think it's kind of too bad. When you look at the footage, when you look at the news footage of the rallies that Barack Obama had in 2008, it was electric. And people were very excited about him. And his rhetoric about change and a new beginning and postpartisan and hope and all of that, I think, frankly, he built expectations up too high. And he engaged a lot of young people who thought things could be different, and now they're quite cynical about the fact that they aren't different and they may stay home this time around. And I think part of it, as I say in the book, was, I think, a relative lack of experience on Barack Obama's part. He had only been in the Senate for a mere, you know, few years, had not passed any real major legislation. And I think he didn't have the kind of background of a Lyndon Johnson, of knowing what the realities of the system are. You have to knock heads. I think he should have been a lot tougher with the Democratic leadership in his first 2 years in the way he handled things. And so I think it has been a bit of a letdown for people that he wasn't, you know, obviously one person can't totally change the system. And so I think that has disappointed some people.
Yeah, Benjamin, thanks a lot for joining us. And let's go next to Ann in North Conway. Hi, Ann, you're on the air with Linda Killian. Welcome.
Hi, thanks. I just had a quick question about the age demographic makeup that you may have researched for your book. I was born in 78, and I've consistently alternated between Republican and Democratic votes for the president. And a lot of my contemporaries are the same. You know, we're very, as you have described, socially liberal and fiscally conservative. And certainly, I don't consider myself a centrist. I hold beliefs that are very far on the right end of the spectrum, am very far on the left end of the spectrum, so I suppose the law of averages brings that to the center, but I certainly don't consider myself a centrist. And I'm just curious to know, are independents, do they look like me? Are they, you know, 25 to 42? And, you know, as we grow up, perhaps we will see a candidate that more embodies those ideas. Initially, I registered as a Republican, but, you know, as time went by, I became so disgusted by the language of hate involved in their treatment of gays and lesbians and race, that I could no longer affiliate myself with an organization that wanted to be in the bedrooms of my friends and my friends and legislate what we do. So my question is more about the age makeup.
Yeah, Anne, this is a great question. Thank you.
Like.
And I love what you said, Anne, about issue by issue. You are not a centrist.
Right.
You're far right or far left.
Right.
So in some, does that really make you a centrist? Well, no. And so that's a really interesting point. But
so,
the
Anne,
age point
you,
first.
So you're 34, is that right? I did the math kind of quickly. Is that right?
Yes.
All right.
I turned 34. That's
so
right, yes.
That's you. And you sound exactly like the young people that I interviewed. You are very typical. I have a group that I call the Facebook generation, people under 35. People under 35 are registered as independents in a higher percentage than any other age group. And it's because of exactly what you said. They don't trust either party. They're used to many choices in entertainment and in every aspect of their lives. They don't understand why they have to choose from just two parties. There is a sort of pick one from column A, pick one from column B feeling. They like some things, as I said, that about the Democrats. I heard from so many young people exactly what you said about the Republican Party's social policies. They are postpartisan in terms of their views on gay rights and abortion and personal rights, exactly what you said. They don't understand where the Republican Party is going on that. This birth control discussion of recent months, they just wouldn't get that at all. And neither would the NPR Republicans.
So younger people do tend to be more of these independent voters. We do hear that older people, you know, tend to cleave to their parties.
And what I heard from the young people, exactly again what Anne said, she used to be a Republican, but the social policies turned her off. What I heard from young people is they would vote Republican. It's not that they only want to vote for Democrats. They would vote Republican if the Republicans didn't pound these social issues. And if there were centrist Republicans, someone like Olympia Snowe, you know, they would vote Republican.
You know, her call also raises a question for me. And that is, how do you define a centrist, Linda? I mean, I laugh because it was so funny, but she said, on issue by issue, I am not a centrist. And yet, you know, she said, in some, maybe I am. How do you define a centrist? Is a centrist someone who is willing to compromise or what?
Well, I mean, on some level, it's kind of a personal thing. It's kind of my definition of a centrist. But what I would say, and I think something she said, and I get this almost whenever I speak or do media appearances, the independents don't like to be categorized. And I try to do it just to sort of bring some cohesion to the book, but they like to say they're independent. They don't hew to one view. Sometimes they don't like to be called centrist. But what I mean by centrist is essentially someone who is fiscally conservative and socially moderate or liberal, who sort of is in that space, you know.
Could someone be a centrist and be socially conservative and fiscally liberal? I mean, for example, you know, I mean, could you do that? Why does it have to be
so.
What you said?
I mean, one of the women that I interviewed in Virginia, and that's my last group of voters, the Starbucks moms and dads, the suburban voters, who are a huge voting bloc. More than 50% of all Americans live in suburbs and exurbs. They totally swing elections. They totally decide elections. She was anti-abortion. You know, but she was a swing voter. She voted consistently for Republicans and Democrats. She was for election reform. And she
felt that the system was broken. She was involved in a group called independentvoting.org, and there's another group, No Labels, that these are groups that have sprung up in this space. So yes, you can have a mixture of views and be a swing voter for sure.
All right. Well, Anne, thanks a lot for that call. And again, our number is 1-800-892-6477. Going back, Linda, to this idea that independent voters feel ignored and turned off, Jill posted this comment on our Facebook page. She says, I've heard of many voters being turned off by a lot of negative advertising during elections. Jill says, is this maybe even a tactic by some campaigns to suppress voter turnout, especially of uncommitted swing voters, so the effect of the quantifiable turnout of the base has added strength? Great question, Jill. Thanks a lot.
It is a good question. I mean, I don't know. I don't think any political consultant would admit to that. But I do know that I have heard Mike Murphy, who's a moderate Republican and a consultant, and he actually worked for Mitt Romney when Mitt Romney ran for governor. He's a national consultant. I've heard him say, and many political consultants feel this way, that swing voters are messy, they're unpredictable. You know, political consultants and candidates probably don't like them very much because they are unpredictable. And you can't say, okay, I know if I turn out my base, it's going to vote for me. It all comes down to turnout. Sometimes you can't predict how the swing voters are going to vote. That's why they're swing voters. So I don't think it's a conscious decision to depress the swing vote. But I do think the swing vote, because of that unpredictability and because of their very significant numbers, they do have power to affect change. This is what I think. They do have power to make their voices heard, but they have to roar a little bit. They have to get involved. They have to tell the political leaders what they want.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing in the book. I mean, sometimes I feel like the book presents them as almost like victims. You know, you say that they're expected just to take this unrepresentation, sit back and enjoy the scraps thrown to them by the two political parties. But are they really victims, Linda? I mean, you're kind of going there now. They can get up. They can stand up. They can vote. You know, they're not necessarily just passively sitting back, taking it, as you say.
Well, I think the big question for our political system for this fall is, will they make their voices heard? And we can talk about that a little bit, about what remedies are available to them.
Okay, great. More of your calls, too, after a short break. The number, 1-800-892-6477. You can also post your comments on our Facebook page or join us by email, exchange@nhpr.org.
The fight against obesity is being waged on many fronts. NHPR's Shifting the Balance is a series focusing on how simple policy and environmental changes are affecting results.
I think walking to school is awesome because they're happy and they're taking deep breaths and getting good gross motor work before school.
Stay tuned to NHPR for reports on word of mouth and from our newsroom about this important issue. Shifting the Balance is also online with stories, tips, and resources at nhpr.org. Made possible in part by support from H&H Foundation.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Cambridge Trust Company of New Hampshire, building lasting relationships and providing thoughtful, independent investment, trust, and wealth management services. CambridgeTrust.com. And the Colonial Theater in Keene presenting Ira Glass, the iconic host of NPR's This American Life, April 28th at 8 p.m. Tickets at the box office and online at thecolonial.org. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, why drunk driving is still a huge problem in New Hampshire. Email us your thoughts before the program at exchange@nhpr.org and join us tomorrow morning live at 9 for that. Today in The Exchange, author Linda Killian on her new book about independent voters. It's called The Swing Vote. Join us with your comments and questions, 1-800-892-6477. Email us exchange@nhpr.org. And Linda, here's an email I wanted to share with you. This is from Doug in Keene. He says, having been raised as a Republican by somewhat conservative parents, I was taught never to trust a Democrat. That makes me reluctant to join the Democratic Party. Doug says, on the other hand, I am depressed with the takeover of the Republican Party by powers that do not bode well for the future. Undeclared, he says, is the only space left for me. Further, I believe that the primary process forced each party to extreme positions. Can you address that last thought by Doug, please?
Oh, yeah. I totally agree with Doug. And it's interesting. It's happened in New Hampshire, and it's happened pretty much all over the country in terms of what he's saying, in terms of the Tea Party kind of, to a certain extent, seizing control of the definitely of the nominating process. You had in 2010 a huge swing in the New Hampshire legislature to the right. And I write about a lot of the moderate Republicans, the NPR Republicans who were in the legislature, who've been involved in public life here in New Hampshire, who've kind of been forced out of office. And it's happened all over the country.
There's even a verb people use. I got primaried.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you had two sort of extreme examples. You had Mike Castle in Delaware, a moderate Republican, very popular in Congress for many years, was a governor of the state. He had a very questionable candidate, Christine O'Donnell, questionably qualified, a Tea Party candidate. And he lost the primary, and she was resoundingly defeated in the general election. Mike Castle probably would have undoubtedly won the general election. But you had Tea Party people saying, oh, we'd rather lose than have Mike Castle, a moderate pro-choice Republican, in the Senate.
Well, is that the fault of the primary process, though, or is that the fault of, you know, again, moderate swing voters who aren't as energized, who aren't showing up, who aren't making a difference? I mean, if somebody gets primaried, you know, isn't that kind of the fault of his or her supporters?
That's a really good question. And because this is somewhat guesswork. It's not an exact science. But in looking at polling and looking at turnout, my guesstimate is that Tea Party supporters are about a third of the Republican Party right now. But in terms of who turns out, for example, in Ohio, two-thirds of those who actually voted in the Republican primary were Tea Party sympathizers and supporters. So I think the moderate Republicans are being kind of intimidated and are not being as active as they should be, you know? And so when they talk about the party being taken away from them, the Tea Party does not represent a majority of Republican voters. I'm absolutely positive of this. But so the swing voters, the more moderate voters in both parties, need to get active and need to make their voices heard and not let the party be taken away.
Let's take another call. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Stan is up next from Manchester. Hi, Stan. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
I voted for Barack Obama. And by the way, I'm not of the Facebook generation. I'm from the baby boom generation.
That's so all right, Stan.
Just to kind of represent ourselves here.
Are you a Starbucks dad?
Right.
Yeah, okay, a Starbucks dad.
We just changed, my wife and I, actually re-registered as independents. We were former Democrats. I voted for Barack Obama and actively supported him, you know, in his election campaign. And what started to me as a profile of courage with Barack Obama for change became a profile of wimpiness as far as I'm concerned. And it's all due to lobby influences. And I was going to address the issue of lobby influences because that was a question I had. But it was discussed in the last discussions here just a few moments ago.
Well, what is it about the president that has you so disappointed and switching to undeclared, Stan?
Well, one of the things is foreign policy. Again, issues which relate to the problems in the Middle East, for example. Also, the lobby influence, things such as our rising gas prices right now. The bill that's being proposed before the Congress with Mr. Blumenthal, Senator Blumenthal from Connecticut, and trying to bring about influence of the large investments on Wall Street. What started off as a profile of courage, in my opinion, has now become he's just kind of acceded to the wishes of the lobbyists.
Well, so is that enough to make you vote Republican next time around?
I'm not sure where I'm going to vote with this. Mm-hmm. I'm still looking for a position, and again, as an independent, I am really concerned about the influences of lobbyists on either end of the spectrum.
Okay, let's talk about that, Linda, a little bit more.
Well,
thanks, Stan.
One group we haven't talked about, and which maybe someone like Stan will look at, is there's a group called Americans Elect, which is an independent group. They've raised $35 million. It is a significant amount of money to get on the ballot in probably all 50 states. They'll qualify close to it. And they are just getting on the ballot for an Americans Elect ballot line. It's an online process. I'm not endorsing them, but you can go to AmericansElect.org. And it's a totally, if you're a registered voter, you can participate. Right now, at the moment, the sort of top well-known candidate that's expressed interest in being one of their candidates is Buddy Romer, the former governor of Louisiana. His top issue is campaign finance reform. No other, Olympia Snow has been mentioned. She hasn't expressed interest. John Huntsman has been mentioned. He has said he's not going to do it. So it remains to be seen who they will nominate. But they will be on the ballot. And I think it is not at all inconceivable that they could get 10% of the vote.
Wow, really?
Yeah. There's that many disgusted people like Stan. And remember that Ross Perot got 19% of the vote in 1992. That is
a
huge number. And that 20% is sloshing around. That's my 20% estimate of swing voters, you know? And what the unintended consequences would be, which candidate would hurt, it's not clear right now, but I think voters are looking to make a statement.
So Americans Elect 2012 is trying to get on the ballot in many states with a presidential candidate?
Well, they don't have a candidate yet.
Yeah.
They're just getting a blank election line, and they'll be first because it's alphabetical on most ballots. And so people can go online, and by the end of June, they're going to nominate a candidate who must then finance the campaign themselves at that point.
June's getting a little late, isn't it, Linda?
It is late. But, you know, I've met with this group. I've met with their CEO. You know, they know they're very smart and have a lot of money. So they're not fooling around. And they know what the percentages are they have to hit to qualify for the debates, which is not inconceivable. And so I think they could be a factor in the election. They certainly can't win, but I think they could be a factor.
You mean swinging it one way
or
the other?
Yeah.
Like Ross Perot, some people say Ross Perot was the factor that put Bill Clinton over the top.
Yeah, and I...
And Ralph Nader was the factor that put George Bush over the top.
I think those are different. I think Ralph Nader clearly drew votes from the left, and I think Ralph Nader clearly hurt Al Gore. I think in the case of Ross Perot, I think exit polling and various polls have shown he did draw from both. So I think it's a bit of a myth that he totally drew all Republican votes.
Let's take some more calls. And this is Mac in Hooksett. Hi, Mac. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Actually, it's Matt. And thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And this is a great conversation. What my comment is just this, that to me it seems that the extremism in the parties is a natural byproduct of a two-party system that's had as much time and money as they've had to perfect their message. And basically, it concerns me that we have this tennis match every 4 years, and our country sort of lost our adaptability.
You know, Matt, it's an interesting point, and one we've talked about before in other programs. This idea that, you know, the two parties are so extreme, as he says, because there's just two. If there were lots of parties, then people would have to, moderate their positions a bit. That seems to be what he's saying.
Yes. And, you know, as I said, I think swing independent voters are not unified on whether they think there should be a third party.
Or a fourth, like other countries.
A parliamentary system. That's right. And that is one idea. And a group like independent, Americans Elect, you know, this isn't going to happen overnight, but it could happen in the space of a decade. And, you know, I think there's a feeling out there. And I talk about some things in the interim, some more modest reforms that independent voters can push for, because the creation of a third party is a big deal. As he mentioned, the two parties have had 100+ years to get sort of 150 years to sort of build their support. So there are a few things they can do. For one thing, they can be active. Vote, but voting isn't enough. Democracy is a participatory sport, and they need to insist that public officials make information available. Now, with the internet,
what kind of information?
oh, you name it, about spending, about what they're doing, about where they're raising money. I mean, just everything. Push for election reform. Fight for open primaries. I think New Hampshire has a terrific system that allows independent voters to show up. They can ask for a Republican or Democratic ballot. They, on the way out, they can say, put me back in the independent column. I think it's a terrific system, and I think it's only in about half the states in the country can independent voters participate. One thing we didn't talk about was legislative districts, and that's in New Hampshire, you only have two congressional districts, and it's the state's fairly evenly divided, and there's not much you can do when you only have two. But in bigger states, this gerrymandering idea that the way districts are carved up is designed to benefit either Republicans or Democrats, incumbents. And so you don't have to be competitive. You don't have to appeal to the middle because the districts have been designed to be safe seats for Republicans and Democrats. There are only about 50 truly competitive congressional districts in the country. California is experimenting with this. They created a redistricting commission, citizen redistricting commission. They had a lot of incumbents. Some incumbents have announced they're leaving Congress. David Dreyer, the chairman of the Rules Committee, because they were competitive districts. And they've also adopted a top two system.
Could we talk about that for a second? And I also want to get to the gerrymandering thing, because that's been brought up a lot in the last couple of years, that these districts are carved out specifically to be safe for Democrats or Republicans. But I did want to ask you about the California experiment. Remind us of how this works, Linda. And I think you say in the book that you don't think it's that great an idea.
You're not talking about the congressional redistricting. You're talking about the top two system.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. The congressional redistricting panel they adopted was really very interesting and is really, I think, on the vanguard of what other states should look at, because in terms of taking redistricting out of the hands of the back rooms of the politicians. But the top two system, I do think in a big state like California, in a state like New Hampshire, top two might work. It's a small state. I think it's easy to get around the state and campaign. But in a big state like California, where we've seen multi-million-dollar campaigns for governor and Senate, it seems to me that the kind of candidates who could be in the top two would be the best-financed candidates. And at least with the current system, independent candidates can collect a fairly modest number of signatures and get on the ballot in the
fall. Just back up a second, though, Linda. I think a lot of people don't know what California is doing, and correct me if I'm wrong. I think what they're doing is there's no party primary, right?
That's
everybody's
right.
on the ballot,
right?
And whoever wins the top two goes on to the general election.
That's right. That's
could be
right.
two Democrats, could be two Republicans, could be a Green Party or whatever.
Right.
The idea being that, as one of our emailers said, this primary process creates really hardened nominees from both parties. So California is saying, let's get rid of this primary process, and you know, which encourages and encourage people to run to the middle to capture these independent
voters. Well, yes. What the California system is designed to do, and independentvoting.org, which is a group that is promotes the issue, the interests of independent voters, they were very much in favor of this. The California system opens it up for the voters. It's a better system for the voters because everyone can participate and it's totally open and they can vote for whoever they want. But I think it's harder on small and independent candidates. That's
especially in a big state like California.
I think that's the problem with that system.
Yeah, and that is about to get its first road test, right? I mean, I think they passed that 2 years ago, but they haven't done it yet in an election.
That's right.
Other solutions that you mentioned, you know, demand the drawing of political districts be done fairly and in a nonpartisan way. I mean, I read that and I thought, sounds good, but this is an inherently political process. That's a really tall order. How do people do that?
Well,
how do you even get started?
As I said, in California, what you can do is have a citizens commission. In most states, the districts are drawn by the governor and members of the state legislature.
Right, who
all have a vested interest. They cut deals in the back room. And a lot of times there aren't even citizens can't even testify at hearings.
But citizens aren't as pure as the driven snow. I mean, they've all got their own ideas and agendas, too, right?
Right. I mean, it's a democracy. We can't avoid some, you know, people have interests. But California, you applied to get on this citizens commission. It's a big commission. Citizens from all over the country, all over the state, a certain number of Democrats, a certain number of Republicans, a certain number of independents, and they drew the map, and it was very competitive. It made a lot of more sense. It pitted a lot of incumbents against each other, and I think it's interesting. Another thing, of course, is campaign finance reform, which is a big intractable problem. The Citizens United decision, a nightmare. Corporate entities can spend as much as they want. So campaign finance spending is a big problem. You know, essentially, you kind of need a constitutional amendment to deal with that. I don't, because it's speech. You know, that's what the Supreme Court has said. So
right,
we've
talked about that
multiple
times on this program.
One thing I say is that, and Barack Obama did this in 2008, one thing I say is for independent voters to give small contributions to candidates that they like of whatever party, if they feel the candidates are working in the middle. Because if you think about it, 40% of all voters, if they gave $50 apiece, that is a lot of money. And if you have some skin in the game, you know, politicians will listen to you.
Here's an email from Jean. We'll close with this. She says, the most recent caller labeled Obama a wimp, but isn't that because he has largely tried to work with both parties? Isn't this what the guest is saying needs to be done? If so, then why is Obama demonized for trying to do this? So it's kind of you're a wimp if you work with both parties, but if you work towards the, you know, if you work with your party, then you're hyper-partisan. It's almost like you can't win.
You can't win. If I can just mention as we close my website so people can see it, and I guess you'll put it up on your website. It's www.lyndajkilian.com, and that's also my Twitter handle if people want to follow me, Linda J. Killian. So get involved is the last thing that I would say. Make your voices heard and get involved.
Well, it's been really fun talking to you, Linda. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Laura.
That's Linda Killian, journalist and senior scholar at the Woodrow Wilson Center. Her new book is called The Swing Vote, The Untapped Power of Independence. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy. The view.